What do you think of when you think of rodents? For most folks, it's mice and rats, and with good reason. There are a lot of mice and rats in the world. I have seen my share of both in my life, and for a whole lot of reasons. I used to catch mice to use on my coyote trap line when I was in college. I'd keep them in gallon plastic containers in the freezer until I needed them. My favorite coyote set is still a dirt hole set, but with the hole only big enough for the mouse. I'd push the mouse in and leave the tail hanging out. Drove the coyotes nuts. I have had pet snakes that I fed mice to. Really, mice kind of got the short end of the stick with me every single time. At the other end of the spectrum, I had a pet rat for about a year after I graduated from college. To this day, still one of the coolest pets I've ever owned. That same year, though, I spent time at the city dump because they had a rat infestation problem. I tried to help bring it under control a bit. And history buffs know the effect too many rats had on Europe and Asia in the mid-1300s. Yes, rats and mice are rodents, but there's a lot more to the rodent family than just rats and mice. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Ultimately, my plan today is to talk about the known rodent species found on the refuge. But first, rodents in general. Rodents are mammals, specifically from the order Rodentia. The name is from the Latin word that means to gnaw. Rodents have very easily identified matching incisors, top and bottom, that grow continuously throughout the animal's life. It's through chewing or gnawing things that the incisors are kept in check. Approximately 40% of all mammal species in the world are rodents. They are found on all continents except Antarctica. They are considered the most diversified mammalian order. Rats and mice are pretty much smaller critters, well, unless you're traipsing through the fire swamp trying to avoid Prince Humperdinck. However, not all rodents are small. The top spot for size belongs to the capybara of South America. Large specimens can be over 4 feet long, 2 feet tall at the shoulders, and weigh 150 pounds. That's right, a rodent as large as a wolf. They are social critters and found in groups of up to 100, and they are prolific throughout many parts of South America. To paraphrase the famous line from the movie Jaws, you're going to need a bigger mousetrap. At the other end of the rodent spectrum is the pygmy gerboa, a tiny little desert critter from Pakistan that is less than 2 inches long and weighs about a tenth of an ounce. How's that for quite a contrast? But that was something of a long digression. For those of us around Bristol Bay, there are a dozen rodents that can be found here. In no particular order, they are the hoary marmot, Arctic ground squirrel, red squirrel, beaver, meadow jumping mouse, northern collared lemming, brown lemming, meadow vole, tundra vole, northern red-backed vole, muskrat, and porcupine. Some of those might sound right familiar. Others may be less so. I have to believe two of the best known, and maybe this is due to size, are the beaver and porcupine, both of which have been covered on this show before. The beaver has been an on-again, off-again topic for years, usually linked to beaver roundup, and the notion that if we're going to celebrate the animal, well, I figure it's a decent idea to know a bit about it. Beavers are North America's largest rodent, and second only to the capybara in the world. I have personally caught beavers over 70 pounds, and know someone who caught one over 100 once. They are much bigger than a lot of people think. They are between 3 and 4 feet long, with that 10 to 12 inch tail. They have small front legs and larger muscular hind legs that sport webbed feet. The tail is black and broad and easily one of its most recognizable traits. The fur is thick and brown, with longer guard hairs that are frequently a reddish brown in color, though variations can run from more of a blonde to almost black. And then, of course, there are those distinctive teeth, those incisors. They can be found along most all streams, rivers, and lakes. Evidence of their habitation is always easy to recognize. Chewed trees and vegetation, heavy trails leading to the water's edge, dams and lodges all point to the presence of beavers. Porcupines are number two in size on our continent with regards to rodents. Adults are 30 inches in length, and that includes a stocky 6-inch tail. Males average around 15 to 20 pounds. They have thick, heavy bodies with short legs and long, curved claws on their front toes. The body is covered with thick fur, which, when combined with a solid layer of fat beneath it, helps to keep the porcupine warm through winter months. The underfur is dark in color, but the long guard hairs are light-colored, often appearing as white or yellow. Of course, what they are famous for is that tail full of quills. Quills are actually just modified hairs that serve as a type of defense mechanism. So, how many quills does a porcupine have? If you said that number could be as high as 30,000 total, you would be right. And it can be as many as 100 per square inch across the tail. Each quill is hollow and is held in place by small muscles. These muscles allow the porcupine to raise up the quills in a defensive posture. There's an old wives' tale that holds that porcupines can shoot their quills. If you've heard this, no, that's not the case. The quills are loosely attached to the skin so that even the slightest touch from an attacker can dislodge them. Babies, called porcupets, are born with their quills already in place. At birth, the quills are soft. Within hours, though, they begin to harden into the defensive weapons that will adorn them for the rest of their lives. Arctic ground squirrels are interesting critters and common across our area, with a rich history as a subsistence species. What makes them interesting is how they tough out the winter months. They have a physiological adaptation that's head-scratching, one that biologists still don't completely understand. When they begin hibernating, they curl up into a tight ball, and their body temperature gradually drops, eventually falling from 98.6 degrees to 26.4 degrees Fahrenheit, well below freezing for water, and the lowest known body temperature of any living mammal. They've developed a unique mechanism that allows their body fluids to become supercooled, to fall below the freezing point, without crystallizing into ice and damaging cell tissue. In some areas, they come out of hibernation to a degree, briefly raising their body temperature more than 70 degrees in 4 hours, before going back into hibernation. This gets them through winter to live to see another spring. Some of those smaller rodent types, I'm guessing at a glance, most folks just think that what they're seeing are mice because they look similar in appearance and size. For example, voles are probably often thought of as mice, and they are related. But voles have short tails if you look close enough. They are exceedingly ubiquitous to our area, particularly the red-backed vole. They are also prolific. Females can have 5 to 10 litters per year. You heard that right, up to 10 litters per year, which is probably just as well for a couple of reasons. First, they don't live very long, something like a year on average. Also, they are a prey species for pretty much anything larger, whether mammal or bird. The newly born voles don't waste any time. They are at sexual maturity at 1 month. As a result of this exponential level of growth, populations can mushroom in short order. Voles thrive on small plants and seeds, but will also eat other things to survive, including dead animals and fruit. Marmots are super cool animals, and earlier this month we celebrated Marmot Day, our state's own version of Groundhog Day. The reason for that is we have a whole lot more marmots in Alaska than groundhogs. Hoary marmots, the kind we have, reach a length of 2 feet or more and weigh up to 10 pounds. They have thick, silver-gray fur on their heads, shoulders, and across much of their back. A reddish-brown or buff color is sometimes seen as a part of the rump and the long, bushy tail. A distinctive white patch of fur can be seen between the small, round eyes, as well as white fur around the mouth and nose. The head has small ears, and the black feet sport long, curved claws on both the front and hind paws. The name hoary comes from the grizzled appearance of their gray underparts, and their black feet led to their species name of caligata, which means boots. Marmots dig burrows and dens around rocky slopes where the rocks provide safety and lookout points from which to spot potential danger. In that regard, they remind me of other ground-dwelling animals, such as Arctic ground squirrels or, stealing from my life back in Kansas, prairie dogs. Females give birth to 1 litter a year, normally 2 to 6 young in late May or June. Social creatures, they live in colonies, though each family maintains its own burrow and den. I'll give a last mention today to red squirrels. These smaller squirrel family members are what's called spontaneous ovulators. The females enter estrus for only one day. They get out and venture away from their territories prior to ovulating, and these trips away from home may serve as a sort of promotional tour for their upcoming estrus. On the day they come into estrus, they are chased by several males. Males compete for the chance to mate with the female. And so who's the lucky winner? Well, it's not just one. Estrus females will pretty much mate with whatever male happens to show up in the mood. A few years back, a Canadian study discovered that female red squirrels, during their one day of sexual activity, will sometimes mate with as many as a dozen or more males. Apart from pairing to mate, for that one day of sexual shenanigans, red squirrels lead very solitary lives. So, the next time you hear the term rodent, understand there's a lot more to that world than just rats and mice. And we have a good many examples living right around our little corner of the world. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.